coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman Report. Had a little trouble with my hearing. Well, not my hearing, my earpiece.
I can't hear anything.
Stop the hammering. Hey.
Just do it live, bro.
We'll do it live. Eric the Tech, how was your weekend?
It was good.
Not short enough, right? Or not long enough. What am I saying? Too short, not long enough. Yeah, the Biden moment. Speaking of Biden moments, let's start off with this. Heavy news day. Heavy news day. A lot of things going on. I believe we'll have John Moore joining here shortly. But if you go to video six, I just want to set the stage of this clown show. And look, I know you watch that. A lot of people watched the debates last week. I know that. And I know that you've got oatmeal for brains Biden up there. Okay, he's not running a damn thing. And if he is, God help us all. But the footage after, I was talking to my wife, it was last night. I asked her, did you see the CNN footage or the, not the CNN, but the footage post-debate where this is after Donald Trump left the stage, walked right off the stage after the debate. And Joel came over to Joe Biden, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. Did you see that little, like a 13-second clip? Now, again, this is a guy who supposedly has control of the nuclear football. He's good between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. or relative to not totally not good. But did you catch this? This is video six on the show notes, HagmanPI.com. And I want to thank you for supporting us. And thank you very much for supporting those who support us. Here's clip six. No audio on this. So there's now watch this. Okay. Made it. There's, I think, one, maybe two steps there. One and a half. What the hell? Okay. This is, again, don't believe your lying eyes. Believe what we, the media, tell you. Now, you know the feeble nature, the fragility of Joe Biden. You know about this, obviously. Why do I keep pounding this home? Who's running the country if it's not him, if it's not Jill? To talk more about that, interestingly enough, we're going to have Jack Cashel in studio tomorrow. At least that's the plan.
It's the arm grabber.
You know, consider Biden took him by the arm at that fundraiser. And then Jill grabbed his hand to take him down one step. And he went one step at a time.
Help me.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that something? I mean, Eric the Tech, did you see that before or not?
I saw it debate night.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
I mean, it's been going around.
But, again, to set the stage, and this is not just related to Biden's rapid cognitive decline, which I'm going to get into here, what's going on with that, and what the panic is on the left and why the panic is on the left. Going to be getting into that, but some other things too, real quick. The Supreme Court ruling in the immunity case came in right along party lines, 6-3, in favor of absolute immunity for official acts, and then limited immunity for unofficial acts. Now, I say that, please forgive me, because this opinion came out earlier today, and I haven't had a chance to read the entire opinion. But the reason I say this, it's 119 pages. The majority opinion, concurring opinions from Clarence Thomas, which is on page 52, I note, and Amy Coney Barrett on page 61. The dissent was written by Justice Sonia Sotomayor, and that starts on page 68, just for those keeping track at home. But this takes two of the four, by the way, two of the four charges, at least two of the four charges, from this case against Jack Smith. And it's interesting, too, in this ruling, I believe it was Justice Thomas. And again, I'm giving you just like raw details right now. Taking a swipe at the at Jack Smith, at whether he is actually whether he holds that position or if it's a bogus position. It's a delicious ruling. And then, of course, the Chevron deference case, which is probably one of the biggest, will have the biggest impact on the dismantling of the deep state. And here's why I say this. In a nutshell, this involved two fishing companies, but one in particular, oh, forgive me, I don't have the name handy. They were required to have on board their vessel a government employee, government bureaucrat overseeing what they were doing to make sure that they were in regulatory compliance. And they said, okay. So they had this guy on this bureaucrat on board, and then the agency came back, the bureaucratic agency came back and says, wait a second, not only do you have to have him on board, you've got to pay to have him on board. You got to pay a salary or you've got to pay a certain fee. And they said, like hell we do. Anyway, long and short of it, went to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, oh, no. You cannot have a federal bureaucracy dictating what they think the law is and imposing that, making that imposition on businesses. So this has wide-reaching implications, the Chevron deference case. And again, the immunity case. And then, of course, last week as well, the Fisher case, that ruling there, it's just reverberating throughout the inner circles of D.C. The deep state is absolutely in panic over this. The fact that President Trump, if and when he takes office again, can more easily, more readily dismantle the deep state. Will he? Well, he damn well better, because it's his butt on the line, as well as all of ours, to be clear. Also, and again, going back to the immunity case, the majority notes that chilling consequences of Jack Smith's J6 indictment against Donald Trump. And you can follow Julie Kelly on Twitter on this. Laura Loomer also weighs in. And now I'll say this. When I quickly scanned the opinion, again, 119 pages on the immunity. Who determines, and I think Rand Paul brought this up earlier in the day in one of the interviews he did, who determines what is an official act and what is a unofficial act? So if President Trump does or if one of the senators, or let's say president, if a president does an interview with a news agency, is that an official act or not? And who decides whether that's an official act? Just asking. They've laid some traps here. I got to say this. I'm saddened by this. You have Peter Navarro behind bars. You have Rudy Giuliani stripped of, well, pushed into bankruptcy, stripped of his licenses, and the victim of lawfare. Like him or don't like him, I don't care. You've got Eastman, John Eastman, the attorney. Same thing. now today, and as well as others, Alex Jones forced into liquidation by an extrajudicial, judicial body. That's coming. And then, of course, they want to imprison him to silence him. But you have all of these political opponents in modern-day America being put in gulags and being put in prison. Steve Bannon being sent to Danbury, as a matter of fact, Danbury Prison in Danbury, Connecticut. It's crap, folks. It's nothing but crap. Here's a short clip. This is video 3 in the show notes. Go to HagmanPI.com, folks, and please bookmark HagmanPI.com. And please do me a favor, if you're watching this on Rumble, or even if you're not, if you're watching this on Brighteon, regardless, please subscribe to us on Rumble and Brighteon. Please do that. If you're listening to this on one of the audio platforms, just go over and subscribe to us, as well as on the audio platform as well. But here's a minute, 11 seconds worth of Steve Bannon yesterday with Jack Posobiec. He's speaking his mind in this. So there's some F-bombs here. But I think they're requisite. I think this is requisite. I really do. This is video 3. Go ahead. Cut 3.
I want to bring in now, by the way, tonight's special Next Man Up. The Next Man Up. We got Poso and we got Charlie Kirk. Jack Posobiec, are your thoughts tonight on the eve of a federal prisoner 0563-5509 becoming an official political prisoner in the Danbury Federal Prison tomorrow? Your thoughts, sir?
Well, look, Steve, I wouldn't say that I'm excited for what comes next, and I wouldn't say also that I'm shocked about what comes next. I don't think any of us are shocked by this. I don't think any of us are surprised.
Whoa, stop. I'm excited. Hang on, Jack. I'm excited.
Whoa. Why are you excited? What do you mean excited?
No, I'm excited because, hey, I don't give two fucks about going to Danbury Prison, okay?
Whoa.
Here's what I give a fuck about. We're going to take down Merrick Garland, Lisa Monaco, and the corrupt DOJ and the FBI and all of it. I could care less, okay? I'm excited because MAGA's going to let out a roar tonight and tomorrow and the next day and the next day and burn it all down till we get to November 5th where President Trump's going to win in a landslide. We're not backing down.
So there it is. He doesn't care. He's pushing forward.
That's not what he said.
Well, you're right. You're right. I mischaracterized that. He
doesn't give up.
He is looking upon himself as, I believe, from, again, back channels and stuff. Look, I've got to do this. It's part of the process. And the one thing that Steve Bannon does, this is bigger than Donald Trump, okay? You've got to understand that. People who will say Donald Trump is no better than whoever. If you think you're right, fine. But this is not about that. This is about the America, the republic that in which we live in, the rule of law, and the equal application of justice, which we're not seeing. Now, I saw a comment in Rumble, in our underneath, I think it was last week's video, one of last week's videos. Well, you know, God's not going to save Mystery of Babylon. Well, who in the hell are you to say that? Seriously. We're Mystery of Babylon. God's not going to save us. Well, you're damn right he's not going to save us if we don't fight back under the righteous banner of morality. You know that campaign ad from 2020, decency is on the ballot. Look at what that got you. It got you a bunch of fags and lesbians, a bunch of minority when I say minority, I'm not referencing skin color. I'm talking about the minority of the population who can't define what a woman is, who can't define what a man is, who must use these pronouns, who don't even have a clue as to what really science and biology and actually life is all about. Okay, that and a brain dead potato head squinty eyed pervert in the Oval Office, which they're going to have to fumigate after he leaves to get the cadaver smell the hell out of it. Look, it's up to us to put in the effort to change what is necessary to be changed. The decision to save Mystery Babylon is up to God. But it's, I believe we're going to be judged on our efforts. And if we don't put forth the effort, then what the hell are you doing? Go out and play golf. Go out to the beach. Go play somewhere. Go play with yourself. Honestly. Are we going to fight or are we going to sit back and just, again, play with ourselves? We going to fight? We going to fight for what's right? I want to know. We can't really. It's Mystery Babylon and, you know, we're under judgment. Well, yeah. And we will remain that way until we right this ship. I'm going to continue with Steve Bannon. Here's a cut four. This is his pre-prison message. And then I'm going to go to another jump cut here. On an interview he did, which I think would be an exhibit as to why they're trying to shut Bannon up. Do you think it's a coincidence, by the way, that they're going after, that they went after Navarro? That they're going after Steve Bannon, where Steve Bannon won't get out until a couple of days before, or a day before the election, or 3 days before the election. His voice being silenced. Do you think it's a coincidence that they're going after, they're doing this now, going after Alex? You think this is all coincidental? It's not. It's part of the process, the fight against this, the very moral, the good moral fabric of this country. This is cut four.
It's not going to stop until you make it stop. Love to have it some other way, but that's just not going to happen. You have to stop it. And the only way you stop it is reciprocity. You have to go on offense. I mean, we had now the House and for House leadership and Speaker Johnson and others and Congressman Lauterbach and people that filed amicus briefs and people that voted on Blag. And do it. If my going to prison has to be what is the turning point of ending Nancy Pelosi's reign of terror, last night you saw it in all of its glory of exactly what they think of the American people and what they think of our country. They would allow that decrepit old man to occupy 1600 Pennsylvania and actually pretend to be the commander in chief. When it's supposed to be very bright lines, we have no idea, no earthly idea, who makes the decisions over there or how decisions are even made. And Nancy Pelosi supports that. Nancy Pelosi is totally lawless. What she did with the J6 committee is lawless. What the Justice Department has done, and hey, don't take it from me, take it from the Supreme Court. And now they're going to run around and find, oh, you got to have a document, and President Trump, it's got to be some, it's what they do on Electoral College. It's the Electoral College. There's beautiful certificates they have. They will do anything. They will get down to the little nitty-gritty rule, this tiny rule, to stop last night. Remember, and that's about this show. It's obvious what they're trying to do. They're trying to shut down. Alex Jones is going to be liquidated here in a couple of days, in all likelihood. Jim Hoft is in bankruptcy court, and they're hammering him. The Justice Department, you heard that, took it right over. Epoch Times is being hammered. Every conservative media outlet is they raided James O'Keefe and dragged him out. For what? Because of the diary? Her diary, the Ashley Biden's diary, which is totally true. They tried to destroy Rudy Giuliani, Bob Costello, and myself over what? When the 51 intelligence officers came forward and said that the laptop from hell was Russian disinformation, that's a bald-faced lie. These people will shred the Constitution. They will shred every law. They will look you in the eye and lie to you because you know what? They don't respect you. They don't respect anything about you.
Okay, incorrect.
You are just...
They hate you. It's not that they don't respect you. I agree with that. But even more, they hate your guts. They hate the concept of freedom. And this has been going on for really the better part, well, more than a century, when they want to consolidate power. This is all about the consolidation of power. The Chevron deference case dismantled that consolidation of power, or at least it struck a blow to that. The presidential immunity case did somewhat the same thing in terms of granting the executive branch the same authority it had under the Constitution. It just put it in a decision format. And remember, based on Marbury versus Madison, that any ruling, any law that is against the Constitution, doesn't square with the Constitution, is not legally binding. It's no law at all. Okay? Just say it. Now, the reason, again, I'm focusing on Steve Bannon is he is the latest of the ones in this purge, the conservative purge, but he's not going to be the last. Trust me when I tell you, he will not be the last. What got him to this particular point? Obviously, the screed or the script written by the left, by the communist left, says that, well, he is in contempt of a congressional committee citation or a subpoena. I'm sorry. Okay, well, so was Merrick Garland. Well, Merrick Garland, the Justice Department decided not to pursue charges against Merrick Garland. Big surprise there, right? As I said before, Merrick Garland should be taken right to friggin' jail by the sergeant at arms. But it's to silence the conservatives. Look at Bannon. Look at Alex Jones. Look at Navarro. Look at all of the January 6th people who are being treated horribly, have been treated horribly. And Fisher might, hopefully, will grant relief for numerous J6 prisoners. Numerous J6 prisoners based on the charges of the obstruction charge is what that does. That Chevron thing, or the Fisher case, really is going to leave a mark on judges like Chutkin and Pan and others. Same with the immunity case. Same people. But look deeper into what's going on. Look deeper into the movement, not the man of President Trump, but what he sparked among the people. What did he spark among the people? It's a populist uprising. Look at Macron in France. He's taking a dive. Look at what's going on in Europe. The populist uprising. Look at what's going on in the UK, Nigel Farage. Don't just look at America. Look at the world saying, the populace, people of the nations saying, wait a second. This is not right. We don't want to submit to a communist agenda. That's what's happening today. But in the run-up, this was last week when Bannon appeared It was with ABC, I believe. And I got so much more to get into beyond this. This is an interview with Jonathan Carl. This is important because a lot of things were said here, and a lot of people believe, and please understand this. You may have heard this or seen this or things. You might know this. My wife, again, my wife and I bounce a lot of things off of her. And I'll say, how many people do you think know about this? Well, pretty much everybody. And sometimes she's right. Sometimes she's not right. It's neither am I sometimes. So I'll ask different people, hey, do you know about this, this, or this? And either their eyes glaze over or they're absolutely paying attention or maybe somewhere in the middle. But this interview I thought was extremely telling because it encompasses the movement and not necessarily the man, the message and not really the messenger and the fake narrative that the left, communist left, is pushing. If you listen close to this, what the communist left is pushing, and I say communist left, I don't think there are any Democrats left. Maybe one or two, I don't know. But it's all communist. So this is it's starting about mid-30, and this is Jonathan Carl, and this is an interview with Bannon, but this is pretty telling. So pay attention to this. And this was last week, I believe it was. Here it is.
Only two other men in the history of this republic, General Washington and the Revolution and the Foundation, and Abraham Lincoln in the Civil War, had the personal fate and destiny of an individual be inextricably linked to the fate and destiny of this republic. Donald John Trump is the third person.
Steve Bannon was an architect of Donald Trump's 2016 campaign, his chief strategist in the White House, and later of the effort to overturn the 2020 election on January 6th. He is going to prison tomorrow to serve 4 months for contempt of Congress. We decided to go see him in the basement of his Capitol Hill townhouse, the place where he broadcasts for 4 hours a day a show called War Room. It has a large following among hardcore Trump supporters. Why did we decide to interview Steve Bannon? We did so because Bannon has a direct line to Donald Trump. He is perhaps Trump's most important outside advisor. If you really want to understand what a Trump return to the White House would look like, listen to what Steve Bannon is saying. So I saw recently while you were on the air doing your show, Donald Trump called.
Hey, Mr. President, I'm live on TV. Can I call you back? I'll call you back, sir. Thank you.
How often are you talking to him?
I don't want to talk details, but we keep in pretty good contact. A lot of the things we talk about end up in his speeches, so we talk frequently enough.
Steve Bannon's worldview echoes loudly in Trump's speeches, with retribution, a central theme of Bannon's war room, a cornerstone of the Trump campaign.
In 2016, I declared, I am your voice. Today, I add, I am your warrior. I am your justice. And for those who have been wronged and betrayed, I am your retribution. I am your retribution.
Some of those who served Trump and crossed him say they're worried. Stephanie Grisham, who was the communications director, the press secretary, communications director for chief of staff for the first lady.
You're not talking about people like that. That's ridiculous.
She says that she's worried about being charged with treason, that she disappeared someday.
That's absurd. I'm talking about people in positions of authority. For instance,
Andrew McCabe, the former deputy FBI, he says he might have to leave the country.
He ought to be very worried. He's definitely going to be investigated. So is Comey. So is Esper. I believe Milley will. Look what happened.
Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Yes,
staff.
Because look at the conversation. We don't know what conversations he had outside the military chain of command when he's chairman of the Joint Chiefs, when he talked to the Chinese, when he talked to Nancy Pelosi. We have to investigate all that. If you haven't done anything, you shouldn't worry.
Well, they're worried because Trump and you are talking about retribution.
It's not retribution at all. First off,
those were his words, not my words. He says you're retribution.
And what he says by retribution, he said, like he said last night on the debate stage, his retribution administration is a very successful, more successful second term. What we're saying is we want justice. We want to have full investigations, and then if criminal charges come up, then criminal charges come up.
I mean, you made a promise on your show, as you said, that the attorney general will be in prison.
100%.
So you're not just talking about investigation. Okay. Is Bill Barr on the retribution list?
I think Bill Barr has to be investigated. Not retribution. You keep talking retribution.
Well, no, why it's all, because Trump justice, said retribution, justice, and you said retribution.
Justice. It's justice.
So Bill Barr needs to be investigated.
Bill Barr needs to go to prison with Merrick Garland? I didn't say that.
Well, I'm asking
I didn't
you.
Say that. We have to see. I'm not going to prejudge somebody. We have to see.
So Bill Barr could be going to prison.
It's not retribution. It's justice. Trump.
Just days after the 2020 election, Twitter suspended Bannon's podcast. The episode also yanked from YouTube after.
Perfect. Did you hear the programming by that Jonathan Carl? Retribution. I mean, mischaracterization of what Bannon stated. That plays, just hold that right there. That plays into what is now being called media literacy. I'm going to be talking about that momentarily. John Moore is going to be joining me here shortly. But the fact is, this is important to understand what the media, saturated by the communist left, by the stooges of the communist left, this is what they're doing. This is how they're attempting to mold public opinion. This is a social contagion. Remember that phrase. Social contagion. Okay, continue.
We seem to imply that Dr. Anthony Fauci and FBI Director Christopher Wray should be beheaded.
I'd actually like to go back to the old times of Tudor England. I'd put the heads on pikes, right? I'd put them at the two corners of the White House as a warning to federal bureaucrats. You either get with the program or you're gone. A couple of days before, I was talking about the execution of Thomas More when metaphorically they put it on the pike. That is a metaphor. In this town, Jonathan, and it's beneath you to bring that up. In this town.
No, it's not beneath me to bring it up.
In this town, you say,
Let me just say something.
Hang on for a second. In this town, 1,000 times a day, people go, we got to put the heads on pike. We have to put his head on a pike. It was a metaphor.
You're saying at a time when Anthony Fauci and his family are facing death threats, when Christopher Wray and FBI agents all the way down are facing death threats, and you're going out and talking about putting their heads on pikes.
A total metaphor. Anybody understands that. That's your overreach. By the way, they banned us, I think, on Twitter. They banned us on Facebook for that. And hey, guess what? The show got even bigger. So not that we care, and I'm not backing off my
rudder. Are you concerned about those death threats, though?
That's not a what do you mean, death threats?
No,
do you think I don't get death threats and have security all the time? That comes when you play at the highest levels. It just comes.
Bannon, who served as CEO of Trump's 2016 campaign, is adamant that come November, Trump will win.
Right now, he's going to win by a landslide. It's going to be 340 or 350
votes. Okay, so this will be easy. So this will be easy. Will you appeal right now, message to all of Trump's supporters, to respect the results?
Are you going to pull this
win
again?
Or lose?
This is your question. Have you asked a Democrat this question? Yes or no? The answer is no. Have you asked a Democrat that question?
I haven't seen Democrats storm the Capitol to try to stop the election.
Have you heard Jamie Raskin, what Jamie Raskin's saying about January 6th, that he would not, so the court
and
ruled
and by
not
the way,
enough?
I have no problem asking Democrats if they're going to
then why
the
don't you do it then?
I have no problem doing that.
The only reason you're going to have it, we put a pitchfork here back and say, why don't you ask Democrats? Ask some Democrats. Here's the bottom line. When this is adjudicated and reviewed, if they are certifiable, chain of custody, vote ballots and votes from American citizens, then, hey, whatever that outcome is totally fair. Until the time that we get that, all bets are off.
And I'm talking about violence.
Okay.
Will you say no matter what?
There,
no
folks, I would urge you to watch the entire interview. Here's the issue here, okay? Obviously, that metaphoric example about the heads on pikes, I use the same thing. Hang them from the lamppost. The left is so damn afraid, and they damn well should be afraid, because if they lose power, this is all about the the continuation of power. Once they lose power, then they're going to be put under the microscope. If, and this is a big if we do our jobs, and you and I, the regular, normal, average people, we have to hold the feet of our representatives to the fire, of the senators to the fire. It's a saying, right? And by the way, if you're not getting threats, whether they're legal lawfare threats or threats by listeners and viewers, then you're not doing enough, in my view. But they are so damn afraid to lose power. This is why the panic in D.C., to bring this all the way around now to the panic that's going on in D.C., they cannot afford to be exposed. Well, they've got a demented, dementia-riddled patient being supported by Jill, Dr. Jill, and Valerie Jarrett, and Obama, and others in the White House. After the debate, they realized, oh my gosh, the optics are so bad. Was that a setup by the power brokers? Perhaps. I don't know. Maybe you know. Maybe you're smarter. I don't know. But it certainly didn't come off too well, did it, optically? I mean, you thought Nixon Kennedy was bad in 60, the first televised debate. Yeah, this beat that by everything. But see, the question is, what are they going to do with Joe Biden? And I want to ask John more about this, because the time to have gotten rid of Biden would have been a year ago, roughly, right after the midterms. But they didn't do that because the left, their strong performance in the midterms really made it politically impossible for there to be a primary challenge to Biden. So when you look at the rapid cognitive decline of Joe Biden and the timeline between the midterms and the debate last week, it's a long time. Now, again, there's a lot of talk about replacing Biden, and nothing is off the table. Nothing is impossible. But there are problems with the mechanics of this, and I don't know how many people really go through the mechanics of what it would take to replace Biden. Oh, I get it. Well, Harris, you know, polling less than Biden, if that's even possible. So what do you do with Harris? Well, you Agnew Harris, using Spiro Agnew as a verb there, perhaps. But if you notice what happened this past weekend, there was a family meeting with the potato head with spaghetti brains, Biden. And I don't know what was said in that meeting, but I do know this. Joe Biden wants to cling to power. Joe Biden wants to cling to power with whatever functioning brain cells he's got left, because he's looking at some pretty serious legal troubles that are deep. And if he gives up power with those legal troubles for him and his family, well, he'd be better off holding power as long as he can. The DNC procedures for removing him, they're not that simple. They're not that easy. And Biden has his own loyalists tucked inside with him, the delegates. And not to mention the ballot issues that would present at this late stage. Different states, different ballots, you know. In the left, they realize that Biden's a major liability. It's at this point, just like on the right, with respect to the amicus brief with Steve Bannon by Johnson, too little, too late. The Democratic left, the donors, the loyalists, would have to arrive at a consensus for a replacement for Biden. Who would that be? Can't be Harris. Everyone hates her.
Can't be John Moore.
Can't be John Moore. Hang on, John. Yet, even if they did come up with a consensus, oh, let's say Michelle Obama. Yeah, I know. Okay. Or whoever. And even if they are able to convince Joe Biden to step down, or Joe Biden to have Joe step down. And I'll be talking with Jack Cashel tomorrow about that. And I should add this. The media preparation is a factor here. The media is heavily involved. The consensus, there's this amazing consensus manufacturing machine known as the media. But both they both require time and money. Time and money. Also, think about how much preparation went into conditioning the public for the COVID response and then the mandates that came afterwards. Now, I use that as an example. That I'm not saying that they can't do this. They can't replace or make an effort to replace Biden. What I'm saying, and there could very well be, and it's more likely today than it was a week ago today, based on last week's performance. But again, the mechanics is something that we have to pay attention to. The steps and hurdles involved in replacing him would be very uncertain, and indeed, in and of themselves, have their own inherent risks. The chaos that would ensue has to be weighed, I suppose, against the negative public impression of Biden's current cognitive state. But again, this is a squinty-eyed vegetable, as we saw, who already served his purpose as a shadow government figurehead. He was always Obama's fall guy, and he still is. And now, after completing his third term, Obama, him switching gears, you know, look, the vegetable and his crime family could very well get pardoned and walk away as multimillionaires. Maybe that'll do it. Maybe that'll help things move things along. Then they turn their attention on getting rid of President Trump prior to 2024. How do they do that? July 11th, he's going to be sentenced. Could face up to 700 years of prison. And by the way, if you don't think that a draconian sentence is going to be handed down by that psycho Judge Merchan and his piece of crap daughter, that whore for a dollar daughter, Lauren Merchan. Yeah, I said it. Making so much money off that trial. You got another thing coming. All of this to say, they want to censor the people speaking out about this. They want to imprison you, Exhibit A today, Bannon. And then they want you dead. They want you out of the way. They want this centralization of power, this globalization, and we're in the way. So this is more about President Trump. This is about people waking up, fighting this globalist system, and winning as we awaken people in this country and worldwide. With me, John Moore, thelibertyman.com, thelibertyman.com. If you haven't done so already, make sure you go to that website, link in the description box below, thelibertyman.com. John Moore, he's been around forever, military. What are you laughing at? The way I said that, he's like a
great way to introduce your guest.
Been around forever. I mean, but he has. He's been on this as long as anyone out there. He's been fighting for the truth for a long time. That's really a badge of honor. I meant that as a compliment. But dapper looking dude there, libertyman.com, bringing some class to this platform. John Moore, thanks for joining me.
Doug, good to be with you. Thank you. Yeah, I became politically active shortly after the Tet Offensive in 1968, when myself and my buddies were outraged at what took place. It did not have to happen. But moving on to more current topics, you probably recall the comedian Robin Williams, I'm sure. Well, the mainstream media is acting like they're shocked and surprised at the cognitive disability of President Biden. 15 years ago in 2009, and you can easily find this on the internet, 15 years ago in 2009, Robin Williams did a skit on the cognitive issues that Joe Biden had even then. Now, what makes comedy funny is because the element of truth. If there was no element of truth behind Robin Williams' skit, it wouldn't have been funny, Doug, but it was well known even 15 years ago that Joe Biden couldn't hardly put a sentence together without screwing it up. Nothing new there. How about that, Doug?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, look, we're seeing... yes. I'll just say yes. I don't think I need to really go on with that, because you're watching a more rapid and more discernible decline over the last 6 months, we'll say, and 4 months. Did you see right after the debate, did you see him walking down that step?
I did. Okay. I did. And he obviously had difficulty, obviously needed the help of his wife, Dr. Jill Biden. We've become the laughingstock of the world, among not only world leaders, but the general populations of there he is. Now that's why I go down steps if I have an injury that I need to be concerned about. But he's walking like a man who either has an injury or has issues in walking in general, doesn't he?
Yeah. Although in his defense, Eric the Tech has to fireman carry me downstairs. I'm kidding, of course, but yeah,
just use a dolly.
Yeah, I just stand on the thing of the dolly. It, with him too, he's yeah. This is for people to see. But you know, John, the issue here is the again. I'll call it a social contagion that the media portrays him as, you know, he's vibrant. And how many, again, John, how many people in the media, how many people, cabinet members like Mayorkas, specifically him, because I don't like him, said, oh, he's sharp as anything behind closed doors.
Oh, yeah, I know.
They're friggin' liars, man.
Of course they are. Well, they're putting out the company line. That's what they're expected to do. Their paycheck and their pension depends on them putting out the company line. And, of course, they'll do that. Well, I expect nothing else, Doug.
You know, what are they going to do?
They're in a rock, between a rock and a hard place. They really are. The technical issues they have to deal with, the legal issues they have to deal with, the practicality of whoever they bring in, whether the three, it's no secret, the governor of California, Big Mike, or Hillary, they're the only three that have both the name recognition and the ability to raise millions of dollars fairly quickly. They're stuck between a rock and a hard place to make this happen. But on one hand, Doug, but they got no choice. They can't have enough fraud with the Dominion voting machines and the mail-in ballots, whatever they want to do. They can't have enough of a fraud to overcome the only man in history who's been able to fill up stadium after stadium, day after day, week after week, with tens of thousands of people and raise more money than any candidate for president has ever raised. They can't hope to overcome that with somebody who doesn't have that name recognition or that fundraising ability. And even then, it's very iffy, Doug, very iffy.
You know, people laugh at the possibility of Michelle Obama because, oh, she hates politics, right? And, of course, there's no love lost between the Obamas and the Bidens, specifically Michelle Obama and Joe Biden. They hate each other. Michelle Obama disrespects Joe Biden. How do you see this playing out, I guess? If you had to map out a strategy for the other thing too.
Well, I'll tell you what I would do, Doug.
Well, go ahead.
First of all, I would replace Heels Up Harris with the designated person to take the place of Joe Biden. That's the first thing I would do. Once that's done, then they can move forward with a candidate who's already president, which is a massive advantage in any election coming up. Then, of course, they need to replace the vice president with whoever the best designated person is. That's kind of secondary. It needs to happen soon, preferably before the Democratic convention takes place in August. There's technical issues with ballots, and ballots is already being prepared. The last date, the ballots can be prepared. There's already been some dealings with that. And it's a quandary. And there's no precedence for this, Doug. There simply isn't. So they're in uncharted waters. When I say uncharted waters, there's no maps showing them what's been done in the past to show them what should be done now. So they're kind of winging it is what they're... They'll have no choice, Doug, but to wing it.
Well, I look back in history, and the closest I can, in modern history anyway, the closest I can see would be Nixon and Agnew when Nixon was running for his second term, and he was winning by, he didn't have to do a thing. He was just winning by storm. But then they attack, when I say they, the equivalent of today's deep state attacked Agnew with tax issues and fraud, all kinds of stuff. Agnew stepped down, and that's the closest thing I could come up with. And they replaced Agnew. Remember Gerald Ford, elevated Ford after Nixon resigned, and Watergate too. When I look at Watergate, you can see the fingerprints of the deep state because there was no reason for Watergate to happen. And of the plumbers that were responsible for that break-in, they were all related to the intelligence community in some way, shape, or form. So,
right.
Okay. Could this be a repeat of the 1972 era, perhaps?
Well, that's... That analogy and that historical comparison is probably as close as we can come. I was, when that was all taking place, I was a young paralegal and about to become an investigator when all that was taking place. So I recall it like it was yesterday, Doug. And it was a very upsetting time for the whole country to watch President Nixon go through all that, and one by one, his advisors and his cabinet be charged with crimes. The one attorney, I forget his name, the guy with the glasses who became a turncoat. It was very distressing. John Dean, correct. Yeah. John Dean. John Dean was critical to making that whole thing go down because he violated his oath as an attorney, violated lawyer-client privilege to do what he did.
Yeah, he was a snake anyway.
The deep state was after Richard Nixon. That's the bottom line because he stopped carrying their water. And he was doing too many right things for the right reasons. They couldn't tolerate that, could they?
No. And you know, look, Nixon had his flaws like Trump has his. But again, it's more than the man. This is about the direction, the trajectory of the country that we're talking about. So I don't believe, John, that they can allow President Trump to take office on January 5th because they are so exposed right now, so exposed with respect to the criminality. I mean, Bannon, I played a clip before he came on, exposing Lisa Monaco, the Justice Department people, Merrick Garland, Monaco, many others, many others within that legal system that need come to real justice moment, and they need to retain power because they cannot allow Trump to take power because of this very issue. So if something happens, I'll just say this and then turn it back to you. I will say right now that we are on the brink of both a revolution, well, more than both, a revolution, a civil war, and a war from an adversary from outside the U.S., perhaps already inside the U.S. So we are in a very precarious position between now and election, the 75 days between election and the inauguration. And then afterwards, it's going to be a free-for-all chaos, and all hell's going to break loose. If it hadn't done so already, go ahead.
Roger that. Well, quick response, Doug. When did World War II start?
For us or for the world?
No, what's now considered World War II as opposed to at the time? Well, I'll help you out here.
Yeah,
Mid-1930s.
Please.
Mid-1930s.
It wasn't
called World War II for years. But that's, in fact, what was going on. The Italian invasion of Ethiopia, the Japanese invasion of China, the German taking over the Sudetenland. None of that was called World War II at the time. So World War II was going on for years before December 7th, 1941. And very likely we're in the same situation now. World War III is being fought right now, and it's not being called that. Now, most recently, just to update everybody who's in case you've been out of town or for the last week or so, we had a vacation beach in Crimea attacked with American-made weapons directed by American technology that the Ukrainians just happened to push the button on. Now, you can only do this war by proxy so far before it becomes no longer a proxy war and becomes direct engagement. And the Russians, as well as they should, are considering what happened on that beach where men and women, boys and girls, and were on holiday on the ocean beach enjoying themselves when these weapons are actually outlawed by international law, quite frankly. These barbaric weapons were directed at them by American resources made in America that just happened to have the button pushed by Ukrainians. So with World War III being fought right now, I think there's a strong argument to be made that World War III is taking place right now, Doug. And our mutual friend, Steve Quayle, I started interviewing Steve in the late 1990s. He's got headlines at his website right now, stevequayle.com, with the former president of Russia, Medvedev, saying we've had enough, basically, and we're going to counterattack. So we have Russian attack submarines 90 miles away from the United States coast. We have the Russian alliance with North Korea taking place a couple of weeks ago. We have communist China licking their lips over the possibility of invading Taiwan once we're distracted with other things. It's really a mess, Doug, and I think people would be well advised to treat what's going on in terms of personal and family preparedness and community neighborhood preparedness to treat what's going on right now as the beginning stages of World War III, Doug.
I totally agree with you on that. And folks, look, I get your emails. I get your messages. The House bill drafting military age males, of course, is coming. And then the Senate side of that, the females are included. So it's going to be your children, our children, fighting in this kinetic war you know, dying on foreign soil for the sake of the administrative state and the weapons makers. And I got a kind of a surprise. I was thinking about you when I pulled this clip, but I'm going to wait on this for a minute. I'll get to it a little bit later. But yes, World War III, in terms of what this neocon and liberal slash communist alliance is doing, is we're poking the bear and poking the dragon and presenting a weak image at home. What better time for them to attack? I'm just saying. And you're right. Look, we're already in the Third World War. 100% agree. When does it go kinetic and actually drag our soldiers and our people into it? I don't know. But it can't be that far off. Go ahead.
Well, I agree. Now, every military academy, including West Point, the Chinese military academy, the Russian, they all study The Art of War by General Sun Tzu, a book older than the Christian Bible. In fact, the same book is frequently sold in the business book section of most bookstores here in this country. And The Art of War, which I've read a number of times myself, is the art of deception, among other things. Now, we don't know we don't know when the communist Chinese or the Russians will make their move. We know that that's part of their overall plan, is to eventually attack the United States. We simply don't know when that will happen in terms of kinetic warfare. The cultural war, the political war, the economic war has been going on for decades, and then, quite frankly, they've been winning all three. I just got a call last night from a private trusted source I've worked with for more than 10 years, who says his friend, who owns a ammunition manufacturing company, is about to close his doors because he can't get one of the critical chemicals to make the gunpowder with, which comes from China, by the way. And so I've been advising all my listeners to buy ammunition now. It's not going to get any cheaper. It's going to get more expensive. And eventually, if this plays out like I think it could play out, ammunition won't be available at any price. So the word to my listeners and to your listeners is to buy ammunition now. Buy more than you think you may ever need. And just do it, Doug.
You know, I to be prepared, you should have ammunition. You should have ways to filter water and, of course, a supply of food on hand, even if it is whatever your budget can allow. But yes, I plus the economy, you know, it's Gerald Celeni famously says all wars are bankers' wars. I agree with that. And I do believe that the economy plays into this. Our economy plays into this. Look what happened last week. Saudi Arabia basically washing its hands, not re-upping a 50-year agreement that was signed in 1974. So 50 years ago, 74 to 24, they decided not to renew the petrodollar agreement that was eked out by Nixon or by Kissinger and the deep state people in D.C. So, yeah, look, the ominous storm clouds of war are over us. It's the way it is.
Absolutely, Doug. That's the way it is. Now, between your show and my show, we have tens of thousands of listeners. Every family that gets prepared is one more family more likely to survive this, one more neighborhood that's likely to survive this. And let's talk a bit about preparedness while we got a moment. There's two skills that, whether your group is six people or 600, are going to be in the greatest demand and shortest supply. First, we have first aid CPR skills. At least get basic first aid training. Now, the nationwide sporting goods chain, REI, they have advanced wilderness first aid training. You can get first aid training at junior colleges. And you want to take it a step further, take a semester or two of training at the local junior college to become an emergency medical technician. These classes fill up quickly by young men and women who want to do that for a living. You might be able to audit the course if the class is filled up. Just talk to the instructor. Get equipment equal to your skill level. It would be a crying shame not to have life-saving equipment you're qualified to use, and you could hurt or kill somebody attempting to use equipment you're not qualified to use.
Can I beat my own horn here? I just want to beat my own. Because I, you know, well, what the heck? In 1978, I became an... No, 1977, I became an emergency medical technician. And in 1977, 78, I became an EMT instructor. And then I became an EMT instructor trainer certified by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So I also became a CPR instructor as well as a paramedic intern for 7 months. And then, but having said all of that, that's not that hard to do. And I'm telling you what you said there, it's not that difficult, and it can save a life. It really can. And life could be yours that it saves. So go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Well, Sam Andrews puts on a high level first aid training at his place once or twice a year. For about 10 years, I did similar training with my emergency team I put together in Viburnum, Missouri. One of my students saved the life of his aunt, who was at a family function. She fell to the floor, wasn't breathing, and used the training he got in my class to save her life. One of Sam's students did the same thing with the training he received. It's literally a matter of life and death to have this training. Now, the second skill is ham radio license, having ham radio skills. Using the modern radio equipment is not like using a cell phone. There's technical things, engineering things you have to know in order to do it properly to be able to have effective, immediate communication. The best website to get started with ham radio is the ARRL, that's Alpha Romeo Romeo Lima.org website, the American Radio Relay League.org website. At that website, you can locate by zip code the closest ham radio club to whatever zip code you put in there. You can get study material. You can learn what you need to learn. There's events that come up, a ham fest, which is similar to a gun show where you can purchase equipment. There's study guides. Everything you need to get started is right there at the ARRL.org website. And men and women who have those two skills, one or the other or both, are going to be held in very high regard in any group, whether that group is 6 or 600, Doug. And we have what appears to be time right now to do both of those, and I encourage people to do both. Now, keep in mind as well, in the modern era, in 2024, you no longer need to know Morse code to get a ham radio license. That's all been done away with. So a lot of people did not get the ham license for decades because they didn't think they could pass the Morse code test. That's no longer an issue, Doug.
Interesting. So you don't have to know Morse code.
No more. It's all gone.
Okay. Wow. All right. Good stuff.
It's good to have. It's a great skill, but you don't need to have it anymore.
Okay. And folks, I'll tell you why. And John, this is one of the clips that I wanted you to see. It's less than 2 minutes, around 2 minutes in length. We as conservatives, Christians, patriots, people as populists, whatever you want to call us, aside from being, well they've declared the administrative state, the Biden regime, the Department of Homeland Security weaponized the Department of Justice, weaponized IRS. They've all declared war on conservative talk shows, talk show hosts, regardless of your presence and your size. We will be censored. And one of the things, media literacy is now this new form of censorship that's going to be used. It's got multiple purposes. And in this in this video clip, and folks, if this video clip deals with schools, public schools versus private schools, but extend this into the censorship of the conservative message in this type of venue. Because the interview is like an hour long plus, I only grabbed this clip. It's 2 minutes long. John, your comments on this as it applies, again, media literacy, as well as, there's one more. When you're listening to this, you've got to think about the censorship bill right now being disguised as big tech's child, or being, let's see, how can I put this? There's a bill out there. It's a Trojan horse censorship bill that's disguised as this child safety regulation. Okay, the bill, Kids Online Safety Act, or KOSA, sponsored by Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee and Richard Blumenthal, is really at the epicenter of this. I would urge you to folks to look into this act that's disguised at protecting children the same as this media clip is being slipped into public schools to mold the opinions of our youth, to censor media outlets that do not follow the established narrative. Cut five. Cut five, yeah. Oh, sorry about that. Okay, here we go. Sorry, John. Talking with Eric Tech here. So, there we go. He's got it. There we go.
They've brought this tactic of media literacy home now. It is really focused predominantly on children. They censor groups who are news sources who are deemed to be low information integrity, is sort of for their branding device for it. If you are rated by an institution like NewsGuard as having a low news nutrition label score, then you basically get disqualified. It's sort of like the way Wikipedia works. Wikipedia has sources that you are not allowed to cite. You're not allowed to cite Fox News. You're not allowed to cite the Gray Zone news from the left. Basically, anybody who flanks the national security state from either their left or their right. And this has now come home to the children. Just this year, in the past 12 months, California, New York, and Illinois. Illinois, of course, covers Chicago. So these are the biggest cities that we have, as well as the biggest states, have passed mandatory media literacy laws that formally require media literacy courses to be taught in all K through 12 public schools in every single county, in every single public school, in all of those states. And they are trying to make this mandatory in every state. So on NewsGuard's board, while it's just saying, oh, we're just applying news nutrition labels, is the former head of the CIA, the former head of the NSA, the former, highest ranking general in the military, the former head of NATO, the former head of DHS, and the former head of the censorship division of the U.S. State Department. That's who's rating the news. And because of its partnership, which is about 2 years old at this point, with the American Federation of Teachers, NewsGuard censorship software is running on school machines. Any news outlet who is given a low rating score by NewsGuard we're entering a situation now where they are Wikipediaizing what children can learn.
So that was from a Mike Benz interview, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. That was from a Mike Benz interview, but the intertwining of the protecting children and the larger issue of the censorship of unreliable news sources go hand in hand. So what you're saying too, I mean, I think the preparation part of this is that the real news in real time through things like ham radio, it's so important to get the on the ground sit rep, as opposed to listening to ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, or whatever it might be, right? I mean, that's the way it is. But they're hammering down on us on the censorship basis, even harder.
Well, Doug, most Americans don't read or watch any news of any consequence to begin with. Adults, I'm talking about. Children, it's a tiny, tiny percentage of children that watch any news. I was one of the exceptions. I started reading the newspaper when I was 3 years old. Reading at three and reading the newspaper at about first grade, I was reading the newspaper and watching the TV news. but that was the exception. This is just a cover story. What they're attempting to do is to censor the news for everybody, not just children. Now, what's new about this as opposed to the way it used to be? Now, before the internet, we're looking at 25, 30 years ago, there was censorship going on with the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and so forth, the major newspapers. Of course there was. But it was hidden. It was behind the scenes. And I got to experience some of that firsthand. The internet has changed everything. The common Joe now has access to real information in real time. There's no precedence in human history for the average guy or gal to have the access that now can be had to real news, uncensored, in real time. And it scares the hell out of them. A friend of mine, he escaped a communist Czechoslovakia before the Iron Curtain came down, literally escaped. They were tried, and him and his wife were tried in absentia and convicted, of course, of leaving a country without permission. He says, John, it's 20 years ago. He says, John, the New World Order will kill the internet, or the internet will kill the New World Order. These people are scared to death to stop unbiased, uncensored news from getting out to the general public. They're absolutely terrified of that, Doug.
You know, gone are the times when, okay, so there was a time when Look and Life magazines existed, and they were infiltrated by the deep state assets, CIA intelligence officers and such. And then you turn on your television, and you could be treated by Huntley and Brinkley, who were stooges of the deep state, Sandy Van Oker. I mean, any of these names ring a bell, folks? Even Walter Cronkite, to a lesser extent, in terms of outright showing the political or the left-leaning bias. Although he did, nonetheless, especially in the later years. But so we're in a different environment. That's why they're so afraid of us, and that's why they've got to bring the hammer down on the censorship part. It's just that they've got to do this. And they're not going to stop there. They're going to end up killing us. That's what I believe. I mean,
well, desperate people do desperate things, Doug. And I refer to the opposition as socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims. And they're desperate. They thought they had this in the bag with a guy who would carry their water, do what he was told. And that was but Joe Biden, of course. And he's reached the limit of being controllable in terms of being in public and not making a fool of himself. He's reached the absolute limit of that. And they have to do something. It'll be a desperate move that they've got no choice, Doug. And we talked earlier in the show about how there's no legal precedence for what's coming. And there isn't. There's no historical precedence is what I meant to say.
I totally agree with you on that. I have another, not to interrupt, but yes, I just did. This is only a minute 30. I don't know whether you recall James Traficant from Ohio. Now, I had a, how can I put this? I had a meeting with, he hired a private investigator. He had one on retainer, and I had a meeting with him. Oh my goodness, it must have been 20 years ago, 15 years ago. And I was treated to a lot of inside information. James Traficant, of course, was censured, was impeached. He was a House member, House of Representatives. And then imprisoned for seven years because of these charges against him. Now, the guy was pretty eclectic, okay? I admit that. Here, I pulled this video clip kind of for you because what we saw with him was after prison, he said, look, I still want to run. I want to make a difference. And he was working on his farm in northeastern Ohio and had a tractor accident. Thing is, no one can figure out how that happened. The cause of death was positional asphyxiation when a tractor tipped over on him. But no one could figure out how that happened. The reason I bring this up, this guy spoke a lot of truth. He spoke out against dual citizenship for members of Congress with Israel. Okay, now I know that's a hot button subject, but there it is. But he also spoke about the people in Congress who were diddling others. Again, the reason I bring this up is because to me, this is all connected. And they can't, these people in Congress, why aren't they moving against the war against Bannon, Navarro, others, you and me? It's because they're essentially compromised themselves. But here's Traficant in this 1 minute clip making fun of himself, his appearance. He was a guy with the goofy hair, and but he said something here that I think is important, and what's even more important is his disposition after prison. He's dead, and he's dead by this weird traffic or this weird tractor accident. Here it is.
I do my hair with a weed whacker, I admit. But take into consideration what you're doing. The two members who violated a 17-year-old page boy and a 17-year-old page girl, which is rape in every state, were not expelled.
Yet his 10-count conviction for taking bribes and kickbacks was too much to ignore. A last-minute bid to delay the vote failed. As Traficant stalked out of the chamber, Congress voted 420-1 to expel him after 17 and a half years. Only Californian Gary Condit voted to keep him.
There was no rush to judgment here. You had a jury trial of his peers. He was convicted on a number of felony counts.
It is really important that the people of this country believe that those who serve in this House are people who put the public good above their own personal benefit.
In a matter of minutes, aides were helping Traficant empty his cluttered office, and Capitol Police escorted him from the Rayburn building. Yet even the man who lost the job to Traficant was taking no pleasure in the moment.
It's a sad day. It's a sad day for our... It's a sad day for the nation. It's a really sad day for the South.
So tonight, official Washington has lost one of its court jesters, and the people of the 17th District of Ohio have lost representation in Congress. But Jim Traficant vows that he probably will be back, even if he has to govern from a prison cell. In Washington, Joe Bell, 27 First News.
John, and folks, the reason I played that, he called out members of his own who raped. And it pisses me off that they've got to censor that word raped. Raped a 17-year-old boy. Page and the 17-year-old Page, female Page, pointed this out. And of course, the words that you heard come across that clip, does that sound familiar to what's going on today? Does that sound familiar? President Donald Trump? Does that sound familiar with others? When you call out evil like that, like we've seen today, that clip 20 years ago could be played today. With
yeah, it could.
Yeah, go
it
ahead.
Could.
Go ahead.
It could. Well, Jim Traficant was an extraordinary individual. I had a lot of respect for Jim Traficant, the work he did, the man he was. And he spoke his mind. And it cost him his position in Congress. What was done to him is highly, I don't know how many times it had been done before, but expelling a member of Congress is a very unusual event, to say the least. But that's what they did to him. And he did serve some time in jail, I believe, didn't he?
7 years.
Was that long? Okay. Yeah. Well, everybody else in Congress got the memo. You can only go so far before they put the hammer down. And that memo was received loud and clear by all the other conservative, patriotic members of Congress. You can only go so far before they put you down hard. That's an unfortunate. I'm glad you brought that up, Doug, because Jim Traficant was truly an American patriot, in my opinion. What do you think, Doug?
You know, I disagreed with him on certain things. I 100% agree with him on other things. The thing that I loved about him was he spoke his mind. You always knew where he stood. Gee, sounds like Donald Trump, just saying. He was extraordinary for his time. But what I find incredibly interesting is the words spoken, and compare that to what's being said today. And look where traffic had ended up. I expect no less on July 11th, where some judge is going to, or Merchant is going to put President Trump in prison for, 700 years or do something radical, because they didn't come this far not to do that or do something like that. Whether or not that holds, I don't know. We got about eight, however many minutes. Take it, brother.
Okay. Well, ultimately, we need to mention this every show. Ultimately, what we're looking at is a spiritual war. Yes, there's a lot going on and a lot of issues going on one hand, on the other. Ultimately, it's a spiritual war. Ultimately, I have every reason to believe that the right side, the conservative Christian patriot side, will in fact win this war. Now, getting from where we are on the first day of July to where we win, it's not going to be easy. There will be casualties, probably physical casualties. People will probably die or be severely injured. People will lose their personal possessions, their homes, perhaps, maybe their employment, maybe both. We've been through this before. That's how this country was founded, by men and women prepared to put everything on the line. Their honor, their possessions, their property was put on the line when they went up against the most powerful empire on the planet at the time, the British Empire. Will we have to do it again? Very likely. And so I encourage everybody to fall on their knees in their prayer closet, pray to our Lord Jesus every day, to pray for the spiritual strength, the physical strength, the emotional strength to get through this. That's what it's going to take, Doug, is the power of prayer. Prayer is powerful. We know it works. And we can't forget that as being the single most important thing that every man, woman, and child can be doing, Doug. So in addition, as we talked about before, the skills. You're going to need skills. The skills of ham radio, the skills of first aid, CPR. There's dozens, literally dozens of other skills that would be handy to have. The ability to grow your own food, for example, to be able to service equipment that we may need around the ranch, around the farm. Finding a safe haven some distance from a major city that has proprietary source of water, a way to grow food, shelter that would help people survive in all the four seasons. A hobby farm is what I like to suggest. A hobby farm, in my opinion, being one of the best places to live full time or raise a family. If you can't start a hobby farm yourself, work with a family that already has a hobby farm. Those families need two things. They need labor and they need money. If you can provide one or the other or both, you might be a welcome family at that hobby farm. And that's up to the individuals to do what they can do to make that arrangement. Time is short, Doug. It really is. Do we have days? Do we have weeks? Do we have months? Quite frankly, I don't know. But do what you can within your financial ability, within the time that is left, to become as best prepared as you can. And work with your team. If you don't have a team, a team could be your immediate family, maybe siblings, maybe people you went to school with, maybe coworkers, maybe people you go to church with. Work with a team to develop this safe haven and get ready for what's coming, Doug.
That's why, folks, you need to tune in to listen to John Moore, the Liberty Man, thelibertyman.com, every single day, Monday through Friday. He's got a tremendous show. You can go to The Liberty Man and click on the show, drill down for the archives, and listen, because he educates the public on not just current events, but on how to navigate through the current events. John, you again, you classed up the joint. I appreciate you coming in.
Good to be with you, Doug. Appreciate
it, brother. God bless. Folks, that was John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Make sure you bookmark his website and make sure you listen to his broadcast. Always informative. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right, folks, that'll do it. Tomorrow, in studio, guest Jack Cashel. Looking forward to that. God bless.